Okay, so we are Musar Day of Perek Ches. So an interesting concept here. I tried getting to the second part of the Perek, but I kind of got held in the first couple of Psukim. But we'll see how far we get. I do have something for the second part as well. We'll see how far we get. But the Rav Salavitcher Kaz, well, let's start with this. The Rashi tells us, very prominent Rashi in the beginning of the parak. Why is it that the mitzvah of the menorah is right next to the mitzvah or the story of the Nesim, what they brought? Because when Aaron saw the Nesim bringing their things that they were bringing, his chalsha, he was like weakened, or he was upset, as daito, right? That he didn't have a portion of that, neither him nor his shevet. So you're better off than them, because you're going to be able to light the candles. So we already alluded to that. There's a lot of discussion about this line. Why was Aaron upset? Why does candles solve the problem? There's plenty of other things that Aaron's going to get to bring that they're not going to be able to get to bring. And in fact, over the court, Aaron also brought special korbanos over the Yemei HaMiluim, the days of the inaugural days of the Beis HaMikdash, that they didn't get to bring. So what is so significant about the bringing the Nesim that Aaron got upset, and how does specifically the menorah solve that problem? So there are many, many answers to this question. I think probably half the drushes on Parshas Baalos have to do with this issue. But Rav Salavitcher has an interesting take that I never noticed before. He says, well, there's one unique thing that the Nesim brought that Aaron was never going to be able to bring, and that is a Ketoras Yachid, a single Ketoras. Now, he would be able to bring the Ketoras, and he in fact brings Ketoras in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But the Ketoras that is brought from then on, I mean, the only time in history that an individual brought an individual Ketores were the Nesim. Never again was a Ketores going to be permitted to bring by individuals, right? And we got into in the last parak how that perhaps gave them the suggestion that they would be better off than Aaron's children, that they in fact would be able to be the Kohanim, because Aaron's children brought a Ketores and got brought up for it. They brought a Ketores and everything was okay. So that perhaps was what bothered Aaron. Now, what bothered Aaron was they were going to be able to bring Ketores, and you were not, and Aaron was never going to be able to bring his individual Ketores. So if that's the case, how does the menorah solve that problem? What aspect of the menorah is going to resolve that? Salvation says as well, there is a significant issue when it comes to the why does one bring the menorah. So in fact, there are two reasons to bring the menorah. Number one is because there's a mitzvah of menorah, and the other one is that it actually entitles one to bring the ketoras. That the menorah and the ketoras go together. That itself is actually found in the psukim, those that say korbanos in the morning. So at the end of the parsha of the ketoras, so there is a couple of psukim that get added on. V'ktir alav aron ketoras samim bavoker bavoker betivois haneros, that Aaron would then bring the ketoras every morning when he would set the lights. He would, yes, he would offer the ketoras. Uval And then, when Aaron would light the candles in the evening, he would offer korbanos. He would offer the ketoras. So what do we see from here? We see that there is a specific kind. It didn't have to say that in the pasuk. The pasuk could have just said that every morning and every evening Aaron is going to bring the ketoras. But it intertwines it with the lighting of the menorah. Why is it so? Therefore, Hashem is telling, and in fact, that is a requirement. The Gemara itself actually spells it out as one of the purposes of the Ketoras. There's the time that you light the lamps, the Ketoras will be burnt. Well, there it's already will have been burnt, but the Gemara is debating what exactly is the order that takes place after the Bein Arabayim, especially when you throw in a Korban Pesach. That Gemara is in Pesachim Daf Nuntesam Aleph. But anyways, they're completely intertwined. In fact, the Rambam says that you bring the first five, you light the first five lights of the menorah, then you go and do some other things. What are those other things? It's referring to the bringing of the ketoras. And then you go back and light the last two. So they are very much intertwined, the menorah and the ketoras. Right. So, okay, why? Well, so that's interesting. Whenever one learns Seder Kachim, right, Daf Yomi is finishing up the Menachos in the next couple of weeks. So you get into all these details, and it's not as the ground is not as worn as in other areas of Torah as to what does this all mean? Why does it matter that something is brought in that that blood is sprinkled in this corner and that corner, and this is done in this specific way and that specific way. It's not, by other areas of Torah, we've heard Divrei Torah on this, we've heard ideas as to what other mitzvos mean, but sometimes with Karbanos it gets even more complicated. So what is the discussion? What is the meaning of the Neros versus the Ketores? So to that, Rav Salvechik suggests that actually, that's already getting into the So what is that? So he actually in the Rav thinking aloud, he actually has this divided up into two different drushas. One was earlier, and one was late. One was later, one was from earlier. But anyways, in a different drasha, he spelled out a little bit more. That Hadlakas Neiros signifies the light, understanding Torah, clarity of concepts. The menorah represents the idea of understanding, of knowing Hashem, of shedding light on the people, and shedding light on some of the mysteries of creation. What does Ketores represent? Ketores represents seemingly the opposite, the mystery of creation, the mystery of the connection to God, that it's always going to be a little bit vague, not a little bit vague, or a lot vague, and we're not going to necessarily be able to get a full understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What is the most significant idea of that? So the first thing that the Kohen Gadol does when he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur, right, he goes in four times. One time, the first time is to bring the Ketores. That's the very first thing he does. He fills the room with smoke, and then he walks out, and then he brings in one korban, then he brings in another korban, and then at the end of the day, he takes everything out. So the first thing he does in there is the Ketores. What is the obligation is to fill the room, the entire room. Even as one gets so close to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, as one is so close to Hashem, as someone is so close to the Shekhinah, it's always going to be vague. It's always going to be unclear and not understood to man. So there you have the dialectic here of the menorah on one hand bringing light and our understanding of the world, as opposed to the Ketores, which represents the hiddenness of the world. And that's why the two of them go together. That this is a dialectic that we keep going back and forth. As much as we try to understand, as much as we try to gain, as much as we try to know about Hashem, we also recognize that we're never really going to understand fully Hashem, as represented by the Ketores. Now, the idea of not understanding fully, we'll take a break from Rav Salvechik, because there's a second half to what he says that we'll get back to in a second. But I saw an interesting Mushal here on that theme from the Dumna Magid, that the next pasuk it says Vayas Kein Aaron, that Aaron did that, and Rashi there, I don't have the Rashi in front of me, Rashi makes a comment about Lahagid Shivchu Shel Aaron Shiloshina, to give praise to Aaron that he didn't change anything. So that's many raise the question, why is that praising Aaron? Hashem gave him instructions and he fulfilled those instructions. Why does he get extra praise for that? So I think a couple days ago when we went through this the first time, the What's Bothering Rashi book suggests that no, you still deserve praise. That Rashi is telling us that even when you are doing what you're supposed to do, or you are just fulfilling a request of somebody else, so that's still praiseworthy. And that perhaps is the message that Rashi is giving.
And also because it's like a tikkun for his sons. The sons brought the incense.
Well, it's not about bringing the incense. This is about bringing the menorah. It's about bringing them out the menorah, so we give this praise to Aaron. So there's other possibilities out there about that Aaron did the same thing. He always had the same zest, the same excitement about doing it, and that's the praise that Aaron gets. But he gives the following mushal. The Dumna Magid brings the following idea, that there's a person. There were three people who got sick, and they all go to the doctor, and they all had a similar illness, and the doctor prescribes all of them medicine. So they go home. The first guy who went, he's like a passionate guy. So the doctor gives instructions. So what does he do? He does what the doctor tells him. He doesn't have any complaints or tightness on the doctor, etc. Then there was another guy who had graduated medical school. So the guy who was the medical school graduate, he's like, yeah, I know what the doctor is trying to get me to do here. Some of this isn't really necessary. Some of it is probably because he has stock in the pharmaceutical company. So I'm going to take these, and I'm not going to take those. And that guy dies, right? After he gets sick and he dies as a result. And then there is the third guy, he also graduated medical school, and he said, well, yeah, I understand why this is being told, I am being told to do this. I don't understand why I'm being told to do that, but, you know, I'll only listen to the doctor. I don't necessarily know the answer. The doctor seems to know more than me, and I'm going to follow what the doctor, the explicit directions of the doctor, and he goes ahead and is able to get better. So he explains that there are different madrigas here, right? Both the first guy and the third guy both got better. The first guy got better because he just had blind faith. He said, okay, the doctor says I'm going to do it. And then the third guy, he understood some of it. He didn't understand all of it. And perhaps that's a greater challenge to him, right? He could have been like the second guy and said, I'm going to do what I get, and I'm not going to do what I don't get. But the fact that he followed the part that he didn't get also is how he was able to save his life. So the pasuk in Tehillim tells us, Derech Emunah Bacharti Mishpatecha Shivisi. Derech Emunah Bacharti is in Perek Kuf Yud Tes in Tehillim. Kuf Yud Tes is a prominent Perek because, anyone know? Kuf Yud Tes? Very good. Yeah, it's the longest Perek in Tehillim. It's got the Aleph Beis. It's six psukim per letter, somewhat popular to do at funerals because each letter is recognized there. So you get a Perek per letter of the person's name. So in the book here, he doesn't tell you which pasuk, but it's not so hard to find, right? Because it started with a Dalet, so it's one of those six psukim that start with the letter Dalet. So the pasuk tells us, Derech Emunah Bacharti Mishpatecha Shivisi, that I chose Emuna, and I accept your judgment. So the first step is to have Emuna. I'm going to listen to whatever Hashem says, but I'm also going to try to understand why Hashem is saying it. But the first step is that I'm going to do whatever Hashem says. So that's the praise that perhaps Aaron gets that other people wouldn't get. That other people, they get the praise. You know, Hashem tells them to do something, they go in and do it. Aaron, it's different because he knows a lot, he understands a lot, and yet he's still willing to do the things that he doesn't quite understand. And that is, and that's perhaps the praise that specifically he's getting under these circumstances. He has a little story here, somewhat connected, but it's a cute story nonetheless, about Tzvi Hirschleben. Don't know who he's the Av Beast, it says here, the Av Beast in Berlin. So he was once asked by someone named David Friedlander. David Friedlander was from the Roshe Hamaskilim Bedoro. He was one of the head enlightenment people. So he said, this maskil asked Rav Hirschleben about all the mitzvos that he thinks that the reasons have gone away, that we shouldn't observe these. So and he concluded, this David Friedlander concluded by saying, Ani batuach, he says, I believe, Sheilu haya Moshe Rabbeinu chai betkufazu, that if Moshe would be alive in this period, bevada haya kosi betorah kifi ruach hazman, he would write the Torah more applicable to Bizman, more applicable to nowadays. It wouldn't be that old. It wouldn't be that old style. So Rav Levin responded to him saying, well, hey, let me give you a mashal. Let's say there is a socher, there is a merchant. A merchant needs to get a certain product to Leipzig. You know where Leipzig is? Leipzig is Germany. Anyway, there's a famous Rav in Leipzig. Anybody know who that was? I believe the Chayyadam was in Leipzig. Jeez, I'm not sure now. I thought the Chayyadam was in Leipzig. Maybe he references Leipzig. When I went to Germany for this conference a couple of years ago, there were a couple of European Ravanim there. One of them was like this young guy. He was younger than me, I think. He was the Rav of Leipzig. You know, that was Leipzig was a center transport place in Germany. So he had to get this to the shuk that was in Leipzig, and he told them this the carrier. He says, "Listen, you get it there, I'll pay you handsomely. And if you don't get it there, so not only will I not pay you, but you're going to owe me nezek. You're going to owe me the damage that I'm going to lose out, that this product's not going to get where it's supposed to go." So it was the winter. It was the middle of Tavis, and it was very difficult to drive, and it started snowing a lot, and the intersections were covered. He missed his turn. The horse got stuck, and Nebuch, he wasn't able to get there in time. So he shows back up at home, and the guy says, "Okay, Nu, listen, I was going to pay you a lot. You didn't do your mission. Now you owe me the money." The guy said, "What, are you crazy? It was snowing. It was crazy out there. There's no way I could have gotten there in time." So he says, "Listen, you owe me the money." He says, "No, I don't. I will go to a din Torah." So they go to the din Torah, and the Av Beis strokes his beard and says, "You owe the money. I mean, that was the deal that you made. That if you don't get the stuff there in time, you're going to have to pay the damages." So the Right, so the guy goes crazy. The guy gets very upset. Rebbe, madua chayev tani b'din? Why are you obligating this? Very unasurkal and apatri, right? Hashem excuses those things that are ba'onis, those things that were unavoidable. Shemadana tashoge kimez v'onis karatzon, right? That you're going to judge those that did something by accident, like somebody did it on purpose, somebody who was forced to do it, like somebody who wanted to do it, right? So the Rav responds, look, lo ani chayev ticha, I'm not the one who obligated you, right? Torah sayinu hakdosh chayev, so that's what the Torah says. The Torah says you make a t'nai, the t'nai needs to be fulfilled. Kol mashe basakti hayal pidin Torah, everything I judges based on the Torah. So the Eglon, the guy responds and saying, so let me ask you a question. The driver. The driver turns to him and says, let me ask you a question. When was the Torah given? He responds by saying, the Torah was given when Moshe was at our Sinai. No, I want to know the date. When was the Torah given? The guy says, it's given in Sivan, it's given on Shavuos, and Chag Matan Torah Seinu. We know when that is. So the guy says, on the 6th of Sivan, Halo Ein Hadrachim Mishubashos, right? On the 6th of Sivan, the streets are all fine, right? There's no rain coming down. There's no coming down. No snow coming down, right? The Torah, you're telling me the halach in the Torah is that no matter what, you got to get there in time. The Torah was only talking about what life is like in Sivan. If the Torah would have been given in Teves, so then it would have made allowances for people that got held up by the snow. To which Rav Levin turns to this guy and says, David, you're like the wagon driver. Right, the Torah took that into account. Right, the Torah just because it was given in Sivan doesn't mean it didn't take Tevis into account. And so to that's because the Torah was given 3,000 years ago doesn't mean that it didn't take today into account. So a little knowledge. So knowledge we aim to learn. We aim to know more and more and more. But sometimes it has its pitfalls, perhaps, and that's also part of the challenge. And the more one learns, perhaps, the more the one is challenged to recognize that there are perhaps things that even he does not yet know. Okay, so then part two then is that Ramban. So the Ramban picks up on that Rashi, right, about why is this connected? And Aaron, plus Aaron saw the Nesiim, got all upset and was told, you're better than them, right? Because they're only doing it now, and you're going to be able to light candles. So the Ramban says that, right, means as many of those questions that we said before. Why would that settle Aaron down? Why would he be okay with that? So rather, says the Ramban, what was Hashem driving at with regards to putting these psukim, the mitzvah of Neros, right after the mitzvah of the Nesiim? So the Ramban says he was referring to Hanukkah. Okay. He's referring to, he's hinting to the idea that there's going to be a holiday of Hanukkah. So how does that understand? How does that solve the problem, right? Why is that going to be a comfort to Aaron specifically at that time? So there is a general question. Many shirim on Hanukkah begin by pointing out this Rambam. The Rambam says that mitzvah Hanukkah, he mitzvah chaviv mi'od, that it's a very special mitzvah regarding Hanukkah, which he doesn't say by, I'm not sure he doesn't say by any other mitzvah, so he doesn't say it by other, like by Purim, he doesn't say it. What is the chaviv aspect specifically of Hanukkah? And then he points out another thing, that Hanukkah, even though, despite what we might have said yesterday, Hanukkah is not Zecher LeMikdash. That we show, even there are some Rishonim that kind of draw a few things about remembering the Beis HaMikdash, but it's not really. We don't see another place. I mean, I started yesterday this year trying to say, "Oh, what could we find about Zecher LeMikdash that would apply to the mitzvah of Hanukkah?" We only found the mitzvah of lighting candles in the shul. The reason for that is because, as I learned this morning while going over this, is because it says the Rav claims that there's specifically. We specifically don't try to take that attitude, that Hanukkah is not about just simply about remembering what took place in the Beis HaMikdash. Rather, it's a mitzvah in its own right. So
the Mishkan was completed on Hanukkah. It wasn't inaugurated until the first
Pesach, okay.
but the structure was actually completed on the
25th. Okay, what's your source?
That was a connection between Hanukkah and
what's your source of that? Is it true? I mean, it might be true. There is something about the dedicate. I'm not sure what that is. I don't know. Okay, could be. What? It's in what?
It's in the commentaries.
It's in the commentaries.
Yeah, I think it's in the Oxford commentary.
Oh, you think? It's not in front of you yet. All right, find it. Find it. Okay.
Find it.
All right. It could be. Not denying it.
It is, I'm sure.
Okay. So if it's not zeich, so there is a question though that if it's not zeich l'migdash, there is a important halacha when it comes to the mitzvah of Chanukah, and that we say in haneris halalu kodesh heim vein lan rishus lishtamesh behem. What does that mean? That the candles that we light on Chanukah are kodesh, and we don't have permission to use them. So why not? What is that kedusha? What is the sanctity of the lights? If you tell me, well, it's like the menorah that was lit in the base of Mikdash, and therefore it's considered kadosh, and you're not allowed to use it for non-kadosh purposes and like that. Okay, we'll take that, but we specifically are not taking that perspective, right? We're specifically saying that it's a separate mitzvah, not connected to the base of Mikdash. So the Gemara asks in Maseches Shabbos, why is it the Torah required that the Ner Tamid should always burn in the Ol Hamoed? Right, that there is a candle there that is always lit. What is that? So it says, Kol Arbaim Shana Shehalchu B'nei Yisrael Midbar Lo Halchu El La'oro. So the Gemara responds by saying that for 40 years, the Ner Tamid of the menorah. I mean, there is one candle that continuously lights over the course of the day. So that's a remembrance to the idea that for all 40 years that Bnei Yisrael were in the desert, Lo Halchu El Or, they went by Hashem's light. El Edusi Labai Olam Sheshchina Shor B'Yisrael. So that is a testimony, that is proof that HaKadosh Baruch Hu resides amongst the Jewish people. So there is a continuous candle which demonstrates that idea. So perhaps, by the way, so where does the Ner Chanukah then fit in? So Ner Chanukah is not about Zecher L'Mikdash, to remember the way things took place in the past, but rather it is a continuation to show that there is a continuous residing of the Shekhinah. There is a continuous presence of Hashem with the Jewish people. And perhaps that is the reference that's being taken place here. That Aaron sees a dedication. He might also see that there might be a destruction one day. Hashem says, don't worry, there's going to be a Chanukah. I will always be amongst the Jewish people. It was made clear during the time that they were in the desert, because there was a fire that was continuously there and continuously leading the Jewish people. It was made clear then during the time that the Beis HaMikdash stood, because there was a candle that continuously stayed lit in the Kodesh. And then it was made clear even after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash by the fact that there was a Chanukah, that we have a constant a remembrance year after year after year that a Kodesh Baruch Hu will always be amongst the Jewish people. In fact, that connection could explain the whole idea that we talked about yesterday. Yesterday we spoke about that we light the menorah in shul, but not by the window, but on the southern wall. Why the southern wall? Because that's where it was in the Beis HaMikdash. So, okay, what about the theme? But according to the Rav, that's not the theme. The theme is not connected to the Beis HaMikdash of the mitzvah there. So, but no, but in shul there is a Ner Tamid, right? In the shul there already is that constant light. We already have that remembrance. So once that remembrance is taken care of, so then we could have a zecher to the mitzvah of lighting in the Beis HaMikdash as well. So he continues on in, to remember mitzvahs in the Beis, or to remember the Beis HaMikdash, to remember things that took place in the Beis HaMikdash.
Mr. Bruce says that for those who are like that would count the sphere early, that's also a Zecher L'Mikdash, the sphere.
I'm not counting it early, but counting sphere in general, it could, well, it's a machlokas whether it's Zecher L'Mikdash or whether it's an actual fulfillment of the mitzvah. Ah. So that's a sphere somewhere. Is a question why we're counting sphere today. It could be the actual thing or it could be a remembrance. Yeah.
It's a medrash.
Okay.
It teaches that the entire work of fashioning the components of the tabernacle is completed in
the template. Okay. Yes.
It is the pillar of fire that was, as you're talking about, the light that followed the Jews. Is that the same connection that was taken to Aaron HaKohen, right? He was, and that was Anai the Covet.
Okay.
Was Anai the Covet, was this?
I don't know. The fire and the Anai the Covet the same thing? I don't know about that. What?
But the cloud was for the daytime travel, and the
right
was at night.
But I'm not sure that I'm not sure if that's what he's referring to. I hear, but yeah, it could be connected to Aaron. Aaron represents that recognition of presence. Yeah, okay, all right, that's good. We could add that into the mix. Sure. Okay, so that idea that we have the Shekhinah amongst us is perhaps what bothered Yavin, right? That was perhaps the challenge that was confronted over the course of Hanukkah, that they attempted to get us, and a lot of Jews attempted to make ourselves, that we're going to be like everyone else, that we're not going to maintain our own singularity, we're going to be like everyone else. And the mitzvah of Hanukkah, the mitzvah of lighting the menorah, is to recognize that no, we do have a special, unique relationship with Hashem, And Hashem is amongst us. So
part of the chashecha that they didn't want to be like.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That was the choshech, right? The choshech of the oven was to be like everyone else, and we have the light. The light is supposed to remind us that we have our own specific thing. So while the Nesim caused the Shekhinah to come when they offered their karbanos, Aaron lit the menorah to demonstrate that it will always that the Shekhinah would always be amongst the Jewish people, and that perhaps is the reference to Hanukkah as well. The idea that continuously into the future, so long as we are celebrating Hanukkah, the Shekhinah, we have that reminder that the Shekhinah dwells amongst the Jewish people. One more issue with regards to the this issue with the Levium and the I have the right, yes, this issue with that the Bechorim were, there was an opinion that took place to exchange the Kedusha of the Bechor onto the sanctity of the Levium over the course of this parak. So the truth is, this happens twice over the course, and they're alluded to it. I realized it was a little confusing to me, and then I realized that there's actually two different times that there's this pidyon on behalf of the firstborns. So one of them took place in Mitzrayim, and one of them is taking place now. And they sort of mix together. But what is the one that took place in Mitzrayim? So this is commented on by the Sforno over the course of our parak. Right, the Sforno comments that Bnei Yisrael, and another place, perhaps it's more clear in other places as well, that Bnei Yisrael didn't deserve to get out of Egypt, right? And Hashem, and that's why the Bechorim were saved, even though perhaps they shouldn't have, and therefore because they were saved, they are granted a certain level of Kedusha, a certain level of sanctity, which then requires a pidyon, which then requires a redemption. So it's a bit of a question there, why only the Bechorim? Meaning, if Bnei Yisrael didn't deserve to be saved, Hashem said, I'm going to kill the Bechorim. Right. So why, but so just because one is a Bechor, why are they, why would they have been included in that gezerah? Why if kill everybody? Right? Why is it? What specifically did the Bechorim do that they are sort of held to account on behalf of the rest of the Jewish people? And perhaps the answer is that is part of the job of being a Bechor. Part of the job of being a Bechor is being a teacher, being the one who will help lead the rest of the siblings. So therefore they do get some extra criticism for the fact that things weren't going so well on behalf of Bnei Israel, and perhaps they were going to be put to death in Egypt, and Hashem saved them, so therefore what was the mechanism that was used to save them? That they were going to have a higher level of Kedusha. Now, that's great, but then they sinned again. I mean, so therefore, they were going to have that higher level, and they were going to be the priests in the Beis HaMikdash, until what happened later on. So that was the sin of Chet Egel. The Bechorim lost their sanctity, or Hashem said, well, they're not going to be my sanctified ones anymore. Rather than the Bechorim being the ones that are going to be in charge, that power is then going to be given over to the Levium, and that's what we get over the course of this parak. Over the course of this parak is that transfer from the Bechorim to the Levium. Opinion of Halil, and therefore the Levium are, because of that, the disgrace that they had, so we're there. It's not given over to the Levium. So he connects this in the Mishnah Meleah. He connects this to the idea of Pidyon HaBen. Then Pidyon HaBen, it begins with a bit of a strange language of the My Beast Tvei. Which one do you want more? That's part of the language that takes place in Pidyon HaBen. The Kohen says, which one do you want more? Do you want the kid or do you want the money? He says, well, I want the kids, therefore here's the money. That's the way the mechanism takes place. So it's a little bit of an odd thing. That's a unique idea that we don't see in other mitzvahs, that perhaps that is the message to the adults or the Bechorim to make sure that you choose the right path. That it's not just a mitzvah of I'm going to do this and dispense with it, but rather the Bechorim is a way of life, that it's a demonstration of this is the way we're going to live, and we're going to which by the way also might explain why Levium also don't have a pidyon aben, right? Levium also are not included in the mitzvah if you're a son of a Levi, or the child's going to be a Levi, or a son of a mother who's a Levi. I was Levium are on the other side of that equation. But you're trying to make the cheshbon of, I want to make sure that I have the kedusha, and I'm willing to give up on the money, despite the fact that perhaps we're not, you know, we're going to live a life of chulin, etc. But that message one should still retain. Okay, so stop here. Pick up with next parak soon enough.